The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now, every Friday we invite somebody in, look at the time, we invite somebody in to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. Today is the turn of celebrity restaurateur. Is that how you describe yourself,
Nick
Mounier?
Oh, I have no idea. Someone starting again. I've done all that.
Nick Mounier.
Hey,
a former judge on Celebrity MasterChef. Thanks for coming in. Just before we get into your life and the sounds that you can remember.
Yes.
What about sounds in restaurants, music in restaurants?
Music as, I'm going to say a pun here, It's a very important ingredient to an evening out, as long as it's not too loud. But it builds the evening up if you play the right music that goes with the concept.
You have a new restaurant, Le Perroquet.
Yeah.
What do you use, a Spotify playlist or?
I do.
And do you do it yourself, or does somebody do it for you?
Yeah, no, I did it myself.
Did you do it yourself?
Yeah.
Right.
The only problem with Spotify is that the volumes go up and down, so you have to constantly
adjust the
volume. Okay. And then depending if you're sitting, obviously, I understand if people are sitting under a speaker, you have to obviously.
Yes, they're getting.
Yeah,
they're
and then the age group obviously is important, and what type of music you play. So I play kind of a jazzy set, French set, and then an upbeat set. So, but it's all toned correctly.
And would you know, at a certain time of the evening then, would you change from your jazzy set to the upbeat set?
Yeah, what I'm saying, so if I start, say, we open at 6 o'clock, I start kind of slow and build it up. But as soon as you turn the music off, there's that whole thing just collapses. You know, people are talking, there's the clatter of glasses, knife and forks, whatever. But if it's too loud, then obviously people can't talk. So you need to really...
It's a thing that people don't give much thought to, the acoustics of a restaurant. Because I remember one particular restaurant in Dublin, and the acoustics were bad because there was echoes.
Yeah.
So it was a very loud restaurant.
Yeah, no, it's not good. So you've got to place the speakers in the correct corners.
Place, right, there you go.
And it just enhances that experience, I think.
And are you a control freak? Because when it comes to the fact that you do your own playlists, and then you choose the colours and all that.
Well, see, I put a playlist that I generally believe I would like to listen to.
If you were in a restaurant,
if you're eating good food, you want good music, but not too loud.
Yeah.
Then you turn it up a little bit if it enhances your mood.
Yes.
If I'm working, I hear a great song, I put it up slightly.
Uh-huh.
And then bring it down if someone complains.
Okay, right.
That's how it works.
Right, Nick Mounier, soundtrack to your life. You were born in Kent in 1967 to Elaine and Jean.
Jean. They call him Jean in England, you know. Well, they used to, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So I take it that your mum was from England and your dad was from
Paris. Yeah.
Right,
okay. And my mum was from Manchester, and then they met in Scotland at the Turnberry Hotel. They were both in catering.
Uh-huh.
But my dad was told to, when he was 19, he was working on the Champs-Élysées as a waiter, and his manager told him to go to England to learn English, but only stay for a year, because otherwise you'll get to the English way of life. So come back to France after a year, but he obviously ended up staying 35 years.
Because you met your mum?
Met my mum. Yeah. He was engaged 3 times before that.
Right.
I have to say that.
And how long were your parents together then?
54 years.
Right.
And he sadly passed away last July.
Oh.
Yeah, but these things happen, you know.
Sorry about that, of course.
But at least I was fortunate to have my father for a long period of time, if you think about it.
Yeah.
So, great man, great parents, you know. So
and both of them were in the hospitality industry.
Yeah, I grew up in that world, so...
What sort of a world was it?
A world where you have to, before you go up to school, you had to serve breakfasts, you come back from school, you do your homework, and then you serve afternoon tea to the customers, and in the evening you would serve the evening meal. So it was constant.
How big a hotel was it?
It was about 18 rooms we had. So it was constant. My mum did a lot of work up and down, so we were helping out the family all
the
time.
And did you live in the hotel?
Yeah, we used to choose our rooms when it was a quiet period, so we used to mix and match the rooms. You know, so you'd have your clothes.
Mix in room 20.
Exactly. Or you're in number 4 today, you know.
Right, yeah.
So that's how it worked. Or you had to turf yourself out if someone was coming to stay.
Right. And where did you stay when it was full?
In the conservatory.
Right.
The blow-up bed. But my dad always denied that. But I always say, no, I slept in the conservatory, Dad.
Who else was in the family?
I've got one brother who's older than me, who lives in France, in Brittany. He was in the army, and so he's remained in France. And I'm kind of the one who left and went to Ireland.
Were you aware of your dad being from a different country? Did you speak French as a child?
Oh, all the time. All my dad spoke was French when I was growing up. And then obviously my grandparents would come over a lot, or we would then go to France a lot when I was a child because my parents worked a lot. And then they were going on holiday on their own, and we'd obviously then go to my grandparents in France.
And you were very close to your granddad in particular?
Particularly my granddad. He had a lot of influence on me as a child because he used to talk about the old days, you know, about the family tree of the life in Paris.
What was his name?
Ernest.
Ernest Meunier.
Ernest Meunier. Great name.
What did he do for a living?
He worked in the perfumery in Paris on the shop floor. And my grandmother was in accounts.
Right.
So they were very honoured to have us as children and walking down the street and showing us off to all their friends and all that kind of
stuff. And they smelled lovely.
Oh, of course they did. So did I.
No, but the thing, that the one sense that jolts us back, yeah, that jolts our memories, yeah, is smells, isn't it?
Well, that's what
our
got me.
Olfactory.
100%. And you have all those always in the house. And it could be the pillow or it could be something, you know, because we always slept in the same room because they literally had one living room space, a bedroom and one kitchen. And the toilet was outside up the stairs in the Turkish toilet. So you're constantly having different smells going on around the wall. You know, when you open the wardrobe,
yeah,
always different smells of their coats and their jumpers or whatever it was. Oh, yeah. Quite extraordinary. And that still resonates in my brain to this day.
Were you the only grandchildren they had?
We were the only grandchildren. Yes. So they doted on us all the time. So yes. My grandfather was a bon viveur. You know, he used to like his Ricard and his wine. And so we constantly spent hours at the table reminiscing about, well, he would talk about days in the war and all that kind of stuff. So, and then cousins would come in, and just great being a child, you know.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Until you give you sheep's brain to eat, you know, stuff that you wouldn't necessarily eat as a child, but then you obviously eat it. So, yeah.
What does it taste like?
It's very spongy.
Texture's not good.
No, it's not good. No, you need to drink lots of Coke with it.
What were you like as a child?
Growing up, I had a great childhood. I was quite a nervous child. Athletic, used to be outdoors a lot. Not many friends, but I used to be kind of the joker, trying to get more friends, and wasn't very academically bright at school. Always used to be daydreaming about playing football or being outside.
Yeah. And did you wear glasses?
Not at the time, no.
Because your glasses are sort of your trademark, aren't they?
They kind of become that. The only reason I needed glasses was when I was working for Marco at the time, and one of my friends said, let's go to that pub across the road, and I couldn't see it.
All right.
And so I had to go for an eyes test before going for my driving test, and that's how I got the glasses. Yeah.
How did, you know, growing up in a hotel, because it's a very different life, isn't it? Very different, like you describe making the breakfast, going to school, coming back to an afternoon tea, sleeping in room 14 or whatever.
Yeah, I used to hate it, actually, because I used to be
quite... And
It was a place called Folkestone, which is a dive. So right. I wouldn't recommend anybody to go. I couldn't wait to get out of the place.
The Folkestone Tourist Board have just...
I couldn't wait to get out of the place. It's awful. I used to hate it because I used to hate people in the sense that you'd hear them coming out of their rooms, going to the toilet or going to the bathroom. And I used to hate meeting people on the staircase. So I used to wait until they'd finished there.
Why did you? Why?
I don't know. I felt really antisocial about it. I just didn't like other people in the place.
Right.
And I just found it odd as a child.
What was it that, I wonder, was it that you thought it was your space? It was your house? And what were they doing in it?
Well, it's like sometimes you sit in the lounge watching TV and then these people will come in. And you're like, who are you?
Yes.
You know. This is my house.
It is odd, though, when you think about it.
It's very odd, because I used to hate it.
Yeah.
So that kind of a child disturbed me a little bit. But anyway, that's why I couldn't wait to get out from my surroundings. So,
and did you feel, or were you advised to go into the hospitality industry, or what?
I was heavily into fashion and music, and I wanted to be something with the creative part of life, and I suppose I was quite lazy. And I just fell into it. My parents used to say, you know, don't go into it. It's hard work, anti-social hours, you know. But they used to always talk about the good stories. So I was like, okay, I'll try it.
Sure.
But to be fair, it's a passport to go anywhere if you're good.
Mm.
So I started at the top and worked down. That's how I always say to people, work at the top and then work your way down, because then at least then you...
But you are bringing joy into people's life when it goes well.
Oh, I love this. And like, I could not do anything else. It's all I think about, to be fair. And it's actually, sometimes I'm a creature of habit. So I love to do the same thing day in, day out. And that's working in a restaurant, serving people. And I've got my script. I've got the way I do things.
Yes.
And sometimes I get annoyed when people come into the business thinking it's easy. You've got to learn, and it's like doing presenting, you know, you've got to hone that craft.
Yes.
And earn your stripes. But everyone now wants to be a manager or
well, we were talking to Colin, was it Colin Harmon during the week, and he's written that book about how to run a cafe, and he runs successful cafes around Dublin. But it is that, and we were talking among ourselves, that everyone has a little bit of a dream that they're going to run a B&B or a cafe or a restaurant, and it's
the romantic
tough
side.
And you've been there.
It's not that easy. No. Everyone has that romantic notion, oh yes, I'm going to give up my day job and open a cafe. Believe me, you need the training.
Okay.
And the instinct.
We play a few, one clip anyway. This is from the TV of your childhood. Here we go. Come on. There it is.
Ah, genius.
I think there was a punk version of that as well.
I'd say there was, yeah.
Yeah. Banana Splits. The great thing about talking to you is that because you spent a lot of time in France, your sounds are quite different and very French. So the song from your youth is this one by Serge
Gainsbourg.
Oh, that's how you pronounce it, isn't it?
Yeah, Gainsbourg, yeah.
I would have said Gainsbourg, but it's Gainsbourg.
Well, he actually did steal that name, didn't he, from the painter. That's not his actual name,
okay.
Yeah.
You pronounce the title of the song for me.
Je suis venu No, what is it? Yeah, je suis venu...
to do something now.
Je te... Que je m'en vais. Sorry.
Je suis venu te dire que je m'en vais. T'es là, on n'y pourront rien changer. Comme dit si bien Verlaine, au vent mauvais. Je suis venu te dire que je m'en vais. Tu te souviens de
Serge Gainsbourg, and of course we will know him best for Je t'aime.
That's right, yeah.
Because that was huge at the discos when I was growing up.
It's mad. There was a customer that comes in every day and he specifically asks for that song, and he drinks a Ricard and he reminisces about when he had the posters of Jane Birkin up on his bedroom wall.
Yes, because of duet with Jane Birkin.
In the 70s.
Yes.
It's quite extraordinary. So music does provoke those memories of the past.
Yeah.
But for me, growing up in that kind of world, was my dad always had French music on. It could have been from Charles Aznavour, you name it, to all the greats. And then my mother would have the Beatles on, or Dave Brubeck jazz.
Oh, yeah.
So I just wrapped up with all that kind of, I think, great music. So I actually have that on the playlist in work.
Do you?
Because it's nice and light, doesn't offend anybody.
Yeah, it is. It does sound like restaurant music.
Yeah.
You just bring it up there again. Have we got it? There he goes.
Je suis venu te dire.
That gives me goosebumps. It's flowy. Yeah. What does it mean? Je suis venu te dire.
So I came to say that I'm going. So it's basically.
Oh, I came to say I'm going.
Yeah. Right. So it's a love story about the fact that I'm leaving.
Right. Okay.
But that's very tame for Serge. He was very scandalous, obviously, back in the day.
Yeah, but Je t'aime was banned.
Was banned. Yeah. Actually, the same thing with Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Relax.
Yes, that was banned too.
Kind of the same ilk of music in the sense of the lyrics. And there's one that he wrote called No Comment. And if you ever translate those lyrics, some people would be very offended.
Okay, well, maybe not.
We won't talk about it now, no. It's a family show.
So as a teenager, what were you like?
I love football. I love going out and exploring things. But I was very kind of melancholy as well. I had a double-edged sword, because I could be an extrovert and an introvert at the same time. So I could go out there and be the sort of the part who will come back home and actually don't want to talk to anybody. So this business, obviously, why I'm doing it, I have no idea. You know, I perform and then I go home and not talk to anybody.
Right.
Because it's draining.
But you see, you do talk to a lot of people.
You talk to a lot of people, and then people then...
But you have social interaction as part of your
all,
work.
All the time.
Whereas a lot of people don't. So you're lucky in that respect.
Yeah, so sometimes you think it's odd to go home and not talk to anybody. because, you know, and it's very hard to maintain friendships in this business, because if you're working in excess of, say, I'm not going to say the hours I do, but a lot of hours, it's very hard to maintain
friends. Of course it would be, yes.
Yeah, and then you've got your kids to look after. Obviously, I've got children now, so that's very important. And also you've got to look after yourself in the sense of having a bit of downtime for your own thoughts, because otherwise you'll explode, you know?
It's a tough one.
Yeah, that's why I drink, to be fair.
But that's not good, you see.
It's not good. Well, you've got to unwind.
But there's other ways of unwinding.
Oh, no, I get that. But, I mean, as long as you don't abuse it.
Yeah.
You know, you still got to perform every day.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
But it's just nice to have that unwinding. Right. A cigarette, you know, I like that part of the day.
That's your thing.
It is my thing.
That's your thing,
fair,
right.
You know.
Why did you end up in Ireland, or how did you end up in Ireland?
Back in the day, I was actually made redundant. I was made redundant about three times in the UK back in the day. And
as a waiter or as a...
Well, a friend of ours was a restaurant manager, and, unfortunately, you know, we've seen three recessions or four in my lifetime, and one particular place obviously had to let us go. They didn't want me to let me go, and so I went home with the tail between my legs, went home to mum, sat on the bottom of the stairs with the AA guide, but it was actually, you remember the AA guide,
yeah.
I opened it up and closed my eyes, opened the page, and it was the K Club,
right.
And I thought, okay, they're the ones I'm going to call up, and by luck they were looking for a restaurant manager. But the interview was in the Westbury Hotel in London. I think I've told this story quite a few times, but anyway, Ray Carroll was an amazing GM of the hotel. And I met with him 2 weeks later in the Westbury Hotel in London. And I arrived at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I always remember, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there was about 20 guys outside this bedroom that he rented for the interviews. And I was number 10, and I went in, and he asked me three questions. What was my favourite film? Who was my favourite actor? And what was my favourite song?
That
was
right. It.
And that's how I got the job.
Do you know what you answered?
It was Robert De Niro.
Right.
The Deer Hunter.
Right.
And Serge Gainsbourg, I think it was at the time.
And he gave you the job.
And he said, so I got 2 out of 3, because obviously he liked the Deer Hunter and he liked Robert De Niro. He said, so you must have a good character. You're hired.
Good taste. Right.
And I arrived in Ireland a week later with everything. But the problem is, in those days, there was no sat-nav, so I had the paper map.
Yes.
So instead of going to North Wales, I was going to South Wales. So I missed my boat and I arrived in Ireland 10 hours later. And then had to start my shift the next day. Anyway, it's hilarious. But yes, that's how I stayed in the K Club.
K Club, right. We're speaking to Nick Mounier. He's guiding us through the soundtrack to his life. We have to take a quick commercial break. We'll talk to Nick more after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Nick Mounier is here guiding us through the soundtrack to his life. They're very helpful, our listeners. Tell Nick in Spotify settings there's a normalised volume setting.
Okay.
It sets same volume for all songs. It'll save him a lot of running around and twiddling knobs.
Gene, thank you so much. Deserve a drink.
Can't wait to eat in his new place. Nick sounds lovely today. I was born in 67 too. Good stocks, says Lisa. And ooh, what a voice. That's not yours. It's Serge Gainsbourg's. Or maybe it is yours.
Thanks.
Maybe it is yours.
Thanks,
maybe
I can do say.
Maybe it is yours. How did you end up working for Marco Pierre White?
There was a job opportunity going. I was getting to the end of my time in the K Club, and I heard there was a job going. I rang Marco. Very nervously, I rang him, and he sounded like Mick Jagger. And I thought, oh, God, and I rang him at the wrong time because he obviously was joint service, which you should never do. So I got my hand slapped there, and then I rang him back, and same thing. He goes, hello, lovey, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. What are you up to? Can you start in a week's time? That was it. So I literally left the K Club, put everything back in the back of the car, and drove to London, and took me ages to find, like, a bedsit back in those days, and and I started...
Was that the 80s or the 90s?
That was the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 94.
Then you were on... the first time we saw you on telly was Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen. So then I left Marco after about 10, 12 years. I was called the boomerang because I used to go, had enough, and then I would go back to Marco. Because in those days, it was kind of like the mafia, where you couldn't go to Gordon Ramsay, you couldn't go to Nico Landis. You had to work for Marco Pierre White, because otherwise you'd be the black sheep of the family. And he always looked after me. I have to say, he was the best boss. I know he's having a few things going on now, but he was the best boss I've ever worked for, because there was an amazing era to be at that standard.
Yes.
I went from the 2-star Michelin. I was fortunate to be part of the team going from two to three. And it was amazing. And it was so zany. It was just wasn't like, I've worked in Gibbos, and Gibbos is great, but a bit too stuffy and a bit too serious. And I was trying to get a bit of fun on the floor, but you can't. But Marcos, it was amazing because you could be funny and zany and mad, and he was mad anyway.
Yeah.
And he'd bring out these new paintings and stop service.
But a genius, obviously.
Absolute genius. But a great memory. You see, that's the genius of a good intelligent person, is the memory. Like, my memory is terrible, so my genius is terrible. But he was a genius, right?
Okay,
I have to work on my
remembering
genius.
Remembering names and...
Names, recipes, right? He could just tell you a recipe within seconds of just eating it.
The knowledge,
you see, the knowledge was king in that.
Yeah.
And so for me to be able to work in that environment and to get that knowledge made you more confident. But people perceive that as arrogance. It's not arrogance, it's confidence. And that's a huge part of this business. Sometimes people think you're arrogant because you know it all. It's not. It's you've got to learn your craft and understand your craft and do the same thing day in, day out to get where you want to be. So it then becomes flawless. You know, how many times of us have been out to a restaurant and the service is terrible?
Yeah.
It's because everyone thinks they can be a waiter. Front of house. It's instinct. It's gut feeling. And that's how I managed to be the way I am now. Because all I do is work. And I love it, but it's not work though, it's a vocation. And people think I'm crazy, but I love it.
Are you happy?
I'm content. I'm excited. That's the
excited,
like,
right?
I'm on my new path, as they say.
Right.
Because, you know.
What age are you? 67, you're. 52.
How old do
52.
I look?
Well, you're looking. You don't look at over 51.
Oh, yeah.
No.
52.
52. Yeah.
52 and counting.
And was it daunting taking on a new project? Because you're saying third time lucky. So you've had two restaurants
had
in
Pichet
Dublin.
Yeah. At 42.
Yeah.
So it's an epiphany moment. I analyze it. I opened Pichet at 42, and the same thing, like everyone wanted to open their own thing. I was fortunate to be able to open it at 42. And then, through obviously, I'm not going to talk about it because I can't, through certain things, I sold my shares. And then, through sheer arrogance, I thought I'll open it across the road,
right,
to my detriment. City boy. And ended up spending all my money, losing everything. And then that was the time of the Brexit, bloody stupid Brexit. And I lost 25% of an apartment that I was selling to force feed the business to save it.
Right.
Because I was trying to save the dream. I should have just let it go. And so I had to then obviously hide for a couple of months, 3 months. And it was Frank Gleeson, of all people, who saved me again, who rang me. Because there wasn't many people ringing me, to be fair. It was quite daunting. And I didn't have much money. And it was Frank who kind of gave me my confidence back, and that was how we kind of got talking about opening something else.
What did you do in that time? Just pull the curtains and...
It was horrific, to be fair.
Was it? Yeah.
I wasn't depression, because I was actually quite an optimistic person. I just kept going. I went to the gym, would you believe? Went back to see my mother, because I always do. I always go back to my mother. My partner helped me, Alana Feeney. But it was just... the fear factor of, oh my God, is this it? Is it over? And that was the biggest heartache for me.
But you could go back and be a front of house person. And
not for anybody else, though. You see,
would you not?
I love.
But is that? Do you ever think of that? You know, going back, doing front of house. At the end of the night, saying, thank you very much. I'll take my tips. I'll see you tomorrow night.
No, because it doesn't work that way. Because you often work with people that know less than you, and that's not an arrogant way of saying. But it's hard to go to somebody else's place. That you may be possibly...
And work for them.
Yeah, for work for them. And I did do that for a while, and I found it really hard going, and internally I was dying, is the word. So, and it's just a thing inside, you know, I had to succeed. Failure wasn't an option. And so I said, I've got to do something. This cannot be the end, is what I was saying. I'm not going to be able to go to work and enjoy it if I'm working for somebody else. And that was me, and that's just me, you know? Because when you analyse the amount of restaurants and bars and hotels there are in town, I was thinking, where am I going to go? Who do I really want to work
for? The number that fail as well. Look, you'll have to come back in and we'll talk about this.
We haven't done any music yet.
I know.
So I was getting all melancholy there, sorry.
That's the way it goes some days.
Apologies, yeah.
Well, listen, we wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, Ray.
With Le Perroquet, which is on the top of Leeson Street there.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I love it. Thanks, Ray. Pleasure. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you.